Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg. All sports.
20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown.
All the time. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at www.sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe, and welcome to the first show of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this 2011 season. We'll be with you for 3 hours every Saturday morning from now on. This is our new start time, and we're thrilled about it. Welcome to the program, my two good friends, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, producer Tim behind the board over there, and Michael Remus is operating the R desk at www.illegalcurve.com. Richie, Ezzy,
hey now. Drew, you know, I haven't been on the air in 3 weeks. That's the longest gap. And Ezzy did an amazing job 2 weeks ago on the Christmas show, but that's the longest gap I've had of being on the air, not being on the air, since we started almost 2 years ago.
That's right. So
missed the show.
I know. You were off gallivanting in Vegas. I was off gallivanting in Kentucky, and we left Ezzy to ably take control of the operations here, and a job well done, Ezzy, I must say.
Yes,
appreciate that. Yeah, 3 weeks, Richie. That's almost as big as the gap between my teeth.
I don't even know what that means. How do you quantify a gap between the teeth? Anyway, it's not important.
I have a space between my teeth.
Coming up
between his teeth.
Yeah, I know, but it's not really a three-week space. Anyways, coming up in a couple minutes' time from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Shelley Anderson will be joining us to talk about the Sidney Crosby injury, Winter Classic recap, things of that nature. Lots going on with the Pens, always one of the marquee teams here in the NHL. So Shelley will be joining us in a couple minutes. And then later on in the program today, James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen will be joining us to talk about the Senators. Really, becoming team turmoil there with everything that's going on there. And then the final guest today, Gabe Desjardins of BehindTheNet.com, sort of the preeminent advanced statistics, advanced metrics sort of guy in the hockey world today.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, Drew, in terms of stats, in terms of incorporating them into hockey, I think Gabe Desjardins is the top of his field. And I think having him on here, and hopefully having on here, we're going to try and work it into having him on monthly, into a monthly appearance on this show, is going to provide our listeners with a little bit more insight into what he does and a little more insight into statistics and hockey. And very much looking forward to having him on today, but I believe we have Shelley on the line right now.
That's right, I believe we do. Tim, you got it queued up? Shelley Anderson of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, welcome. Thanks for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
It's my pleasure.
Thanks, Shelley. Shelley, let's start with Sidney Crosby. He's really the hockey world revolves around him. Can you update us on his health? And did the team err in allowing Crosby to play that first game after the Winter Classic against Tampa Bay?
Well, we're going to talk to him apparently later this morning, so we can kind of get an idea from him directly. Up until then, we're reliant on what the team has told us, and I've not heard anything different from what the team has told us, despite all the speculation. But you know, he took a big hit from David Steckel during the Winter Classic and certainly seemed dazed or injured a little bit. Finished that game. The team had a day off on Sunday. He practiced on Monday, Tuesday. They had a game on Wednesday. He played in that game. In the second period of that game, absorbed a pretty big hit, kind of head-on, you know, facing the ice, facing the glass behind the net from Victor Hedman of Tampa Bay. And stayed in that game, but that was such a blowout, wasn't it? A lot of the big minutes guys for the Penguins were really used very sparingly in the third period, so he didn't play much in the third period. Traveled with the team that night to Montreal after the game, and when he woke up the next morning, had some symptoms that concerned him. The Penguins talked to him and sent him back to Pittsburgh, where later that day he was diagnosed with what the team is calling a mild concussion. So whether some of those symptoms first began or whether the concussion, there was some amount of concussion from the David Steckel hit, the Penguins are saying no. They're saying they checked him out, and that the Victor Hedman hit apparently is what caused this. Whether that both were contributing, I don't know if we'll ever know, or if doctors will know. Sometimes you're reliant on what the athlete tells you he's feeling, too. So it'll be interesting to see what Sidney Crosby says. I'm sure he's going to be asked those questions pretty specifically today.
And Shelley, Crosby suffered that injury in the Winter Classic, and there's been a lot, obviously, a ton of press about it and a ton of positive press. But in terms of the team, you know, there's a lot of rumblings out of Washington that the Capitol players were not in favor of having the cameras around and grew tired of it near the end of the shooting, right past New Year's Eve there, New Year's Day. How did the Penguins feel about it? And also, did it have an effect on their play one way or the other?
I'm sorry, on the rain?
No, the 24/7, Shelley.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, the ACL. I from what I gather, it kind of became old hat to them. I think in the beginning, there was some consternation. There was some self-consciousness because we aren't talking about a camera person. We're talking about somebody with a boom and somebody with two or three different cameramen. Some of them have dollies and they're doing different things. A sound check guy and production guy. It was a whole crew that was following them around as a team at every practice and game and flight, and then sometimes with players and coaches going home with them and doing some things from their homes. But from everything that the Penguins have told me, I talked a lot to the Capitals, but from everything the Penguins have told me, it kind of became where they became familiar with those HBO people, and it didn't have quite the same effect on them. It kind of became just part of the daily routine. So a couple of them did say that afterward they didn't have to think in the back of their mind about what they were saying, whether it was language they were using, or I gathered that the thing they were most concerned about was saying something or doing something that would give another team a strategic advantage, mm-hmm. And more than invasion of privacy or something like that.
Would you be able to take us back to the Winter Classic? It was about a week ago today. How did you find the entire experience, and what was the feeling like around the team and in the dressing room?
I think there was a lot of excitement. I mean, obviously the team that loses is going to be pretty disappointed, and that was the Penguins. But I think that I think that they knew a day or two in advance that the game was probably going to be moved to nighttime. So I don't think that was a major change for them or a big blow or kind of a difference in routine. As a matter of fact, it turned out to be a pretty nice routine for them because both teams were able to come to Console Energy Center in the morning and have a morning skate. So it was kind of a normal game day in that sense. Mm-hmm. And then the rain, I think, was kind of a downer and really kind of made conditions a little tough. But I think they were all expecting that it was an outdoor game, you could get all kinds of different conditions. But I think they all thought it was a really cool thing. And I think the setting there was really nice. The fact that it was at night, I think, might have actually been better. It was just, the particular setting, Heinz Field in Pittsburgh, has a nice open view of the downtown. So at night, everything was lit up. The river's right outside the stadium, and it actually made for a nice atmosphere. 68,000 screaming people with a mix of Capitals and Penguins fans. It seemed to be a pretty good atmosphere. I think the NHL can't be too disappointed, despite the fact that they had to change the schedule.
Yeah, it wasn't a case where the Penguins, having participated in Winter Classic a few years ago, that they're sort of the uniqueness of the event didn't have the same effect on the dressing room or anything like that.
Not really, but you have to look at it. There are only 8 guys who remain from that team. That wasn't that long ago. So you had a lot of turnover, and 2 of them, Marc-Andre Fleury and Max Talbot, were hurt and didn't play in the first one. So you really only had a handful of guys who actually experienced it during the game in Buffalo. So that I think that probably worked in the Penguins' favor because you had a lot of guys who were still kind of wide-eyed about it and really thought, this is going to be cool. I'm looking forward to experiencing this.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Shelley Anderson of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Shelley, one of the sort of, as we were going through the 24/7 series, one of the big comebacks, for lack of a better word, was Jordan Staal's return to the Penguins. He's been out all year, of course, with his various ailments. What effect has his return had both on the ice and in the dressing room?
I think it's been great. I think he played a really strong game, I thought, particularly the first period or so in the Winter Classic. Didn't look like someone who's missed half a season and been on crutches all summer and hadn't been able to do much for a long time. But I think in the locker room, he's not the most vocal guy in the locker room, but I think that he's kind of part of the makeup of the team, and I think he just kind of completes the room a little bit, and I think the guys are really happy to have him back. But on the ice, obviously they're going to stick with their plan of having him center a second line with Evgeny Malkin on the wing. And it's only been a few games, so we're going to have to see. And now we're not having Sidney Crosby, so you don't have that 1-2 dynamic punch with Crosby on the top line. So it's going to be a little bit different than what we're going to see the rest of the season. But I think it's a pretty good experiment. And I think Jordan Staal, with his really strong two-way play, if he and Malkin can really click, I think it's going to be a tremendous. It's like making a trade without having to give someone up to get him there at midseason.
Shelley, I was in the States last week, and Barry Melrose went on ESPN and said that he thought Chris Letang was the best defenseman in the National Hockey League. Now, I'm not sure if I go that far, although I certainly like his game. But can you talk to, can you tell us a little bit about the progress of Chris Letang over the past few seasons and, where he kind of stands as the Penguins' number one defenseman right now?
Yeah, it's been incredible. And I think particularly you see the leap from last year to this year, and he's only 23, so that's not probably not that unexpected that he's going to make big strides for someone that came in with a lot of talent. The thing I see with him the most is actually confidence. He's had the offensive skills from the early times that he was with the Penguins. He knew that he had to really concentrate on being sound defensively while still letting his offensive skills shine. Getting that balance was difficult for him. He really tosses hard. He took mistakes hard. And so sometimes he would have an opportunity to join the rush or to go in deep, and he would hesitate. And so the forward who normally would rotate back and cover for him or his defense partner would also kind of hesitate, and that really broke down a lot of plays. Now he's playing with a lot of confidence. He knows his teammates have his back. He knows he's got the green light to do those things, and he still has the speed and strength to get back and play well defensively if he needs to. And it's just really showing into a well-rounded game. I don't know if you can say he's the best defenseman in the league at this point, but he certainly trusts himself among the elite, I believe.
Penn's GM Ray Shiro is definitely not afraid to get active around the trade deadline. What moves do you think he's looking to make, or do you think he will make?
It's interesting. I just had a long conversation with Ray yesterday, just kind of a mid-season catch-up with him. He surprises us almost every year with some interesting moves that he makes. He talks about even some small moves, like signing Craig Adams off of waivers, who's been a really good penalty killer and defensive guy for them, not necessarily a blockbuster thing. Bill Guerin and Marion Hossa, there are some acquisitions he's made at the trade line that have been great. But he reiterated what he's been saying for a long time, and that is during the offseason they gave it a lot of thought and they decided that upgrading their defense was really the priority over getting a big sniper-type winger. And then putting Malkin on the wing kind of took care of that to some extent. But he feels like you can get the best wingers in the world, but if you don't have the defensemen who are mobile and are going to move that puck up to them, then you've kind of defeated the purpose. So I'm not saying that he's ready to stand pat, but he seems pretty happy with what he's got, and he seems pretty happy with the philosophy that they developed over the offseason. And I don't see them panicking and changing that at this point.
Shelly Anderson of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Legal Curve Hockey Show, and enjoy the Penguins Wild game tonight.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, Take care, Shelly. Thanks very much. The Penguins are the marquee franchise in the NHL right now, just by Sidney Crosby's presence. And I really, Shelly spoke to it at the end there about the changes the Penguins have made on the defensive side. And you look at that defense, and I think I spoke about it a few weeks ago, about how this is really, they have the sort of an underrated defensive unit, and they have a lot of depth there as well.
They do, Drew, and I think that, quickly, I know we got to go to a break, but I think that the emergence of a guy like Goligoski and the improvement of Letang is more of a big deal than Paul Martin and Zdeněk Mihajlík. Obviously, Mihajlík's been injured this year, but Paul Martin, I don't think is improved them that much. He's a steady defenseman, but
steady defenseman.
He's their number four or five defenseman. I think that some of the development of their younger guys is more important. Yeah, they've got an underrated defenseman. Brooks Orpik is a fantastic defenseman. He's not going to give you a lot of offense, but I mean, Pittsburgh's ready to go for the playoffs. They might make one move, like Shelley said, but it might be a minor move.
I still think that the Penguins add a winger before the trade deadline. Doesn't need to be a huge impact addition, but something like a Bill Guerin, a veteran guy maybe. You don't need a veteran guy because they're already experienced, but a veteran, somebody like that, like a Langenbrenner type.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to cost them a third-round pick. I know the Devils aren't trading Langenbrenner to, the Penguins.
Devils weren't trading, yeah.
But that kind of player, if available for that kind of a price, is something they'd certainly be looking to do.
Yeah, I think they'll expect a long playoff run in Pittsburgh. You do every year, but you really expect it this year.
Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to recap last night in the NHL. Look forward to tonight's games. Still much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. In the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Shelly Anderson of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, who joined us last segment to talk about Sidney Crosby, the Penguins, Winter Classic, HBO 24/7, all sorts of things of that nature. Come join the conversation here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Go to www.illegalcurve.com. Join Michael Remus in the R Desk. He's got the live chat going, the streaming audio, a lot of good video, good discussion about the game of hockey, the game that you love so much. www.illegalcurve.com. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter at just search for at Legal Curve, and on Facebook, search for a Legal Curve on Facebook as well. Let's go with the recap of last night in the NHL, starting in Atlanta, where really the Leafs offense, and usually the Leafs offense is offensive.
I was waiting for that one.
Thank you. Exploded in a 9-3 victory over the Atlanta Thrashers. I saw the score after I finished my intense curling matchup, and a double take.
Yeah.
Well, isn't intense and curling an oxymoron?
You've never seen me curl, obviously.
Yeah. No, but that game was ridiculous, and that was a road game for the Leafs.
Well, it actually was a home game given the amount of fans that were cheering for the Leafs there in Atlanta, but that's another issue for another day and time. Just in terms of the significance of the game, this doesn't mean anything. I mean, the Leafs are a hockey team. They have they lack in many aspects. The line that was going yesterday, the Skrabowski line, is... certainly, so Grabowski's been their best player, but guys, you know, MacArthur, you know, going to Atlanta. The fact of the matter is this team stinks.
It's an anomaly that they won.
And the Thrashers have been probably the NHL's best surprise this year. And the Leafs got lucky. They potted a couple goals, and, you know, there you go. I guess they tied two in a row together there. But what are they going to do, make a big run? No, they don't have the talent. I mean, you talk about, quickly, I'm going to go on a little rant here. They talk about Ron Wilson and what he's done or what he hasn't done. And he hasn't done anything. Their plan Lily Killing has been awful for 4 years consecutively with different personnel. That falls on the coach's shoulders. But overall, I mean, the talent isn't there. So you watch this team play and they're lamenting this. The fans are lamenting this or lamenting that. The truth is, there just isn't enough talent. So games like the 9-3 games are an anomaly. And then next game they'll go out and lose 2-0.
Which would be what we've expected. 5 assists for Thomas Cavalier last night.
You know, well, a marketable asset. Yeah. Of course, a marketable asset that Brian Burke, for whatever reason, has chosen not to trade. And now at this point in time, this team is going nowhere. And this team going nowhere is going to be able to trade Thomas Cavalier if he agrees to it at the deadline. Over the summer, he could have traded Thomas Cavalier, Brian Burke being he. Could have traded Thomas Cavalier without having him having to waive his no-trade clause and received more for him then than he will for him now, especially with Cavalier controlling his destination.
Yeah. I think now with, you know, it's pretty clear the Leafs aren't going to make the, well, it's been clear for a while the Leafs aren't going to make the playoffs, but...
clear on October 5th.
It's pretty clear that they're going to have trouble making the playoffs next year. So Brian Burke would probably be well-advised to... you know, get a draft pick and a younger defenseman because the team's rebuilding.
But he would have been better off doing that in the summer when, Richie said, he had the ball in his court. He had the option to do what he wanted. Now Cavalier holds all the cards and can veto. You know,
that's right.
Going wherever Burke makes
a reasonable salary. Yeah. 32 years old. He's a puck mover. He's a 32-year-old puck mover who's not physical. So it's not like he's wearing down here.
Well, guys, a team right now that's battling for a playoff spot in the West that really needs that puck moving defenseman is Columbus, and you have to think that. Thomas Cavalier, if they're trying to make a trade with Columbus, if I'm Thomas Cavalier, I don't want to go to Columbus.
There you go, exactly right.
And now he holds the ball on his court, so he can say, no, I'm going to
wait. Exactly right, is he?
You know, he's not going to be in Toronto next year, we know that. So he can just, you know, wind out the year, become a UFA, and you know, and why does he have to help the Leafs?
And the thing is, Cavalier will sign a nice 2-3-year deal off his career with the team, because he's still got some hockey left.
Well, he's 32 years old, yeah.
Nicholas Lidstrom's, you know, shining at 40, and Cavalier's the type of guy... He's not. His numbers aren't falling off dramatically. He's the type of guy. He might even play 4 or 5 more years.
I'll tell you this. Watch out for if Montreal does have troubles and sketches out a bit about signing Markov.
Yeah,
I could see Cavalier hopping over there as a free agent.
That'd be would really add a little bit more of a dynamic to already NHL's best rivalry. Moving to Florida, where the Carolina Hurricanes defeated the Florida Panthers 5-3 in a riveting Southeast Division tilt.
Jeff Skinner. Keeping it going.
Just keep doing 2 goals.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. And he's,
and
you know,
an assist.
We can talk about him later in our awards segment that we're going to do, the half season awards. But
we don't have a half season awards segment today.
Got rid of it?
It was never there.
I pushed for it and Drew excluded it.
When did you push for it?
I pushed for it in the
you got rid of it? You did not mention anything during the Illegal Curve production meeting.
No, remember I put together the...
Oh, it was Ezzy's midweek email.
See, Remus is giving you the thumbs up.
Yeah, really?
I sent out the email with the structure for the show, but that's fine. We have lots of news to talk about.
On that point, guys, Jeff Skinner, to me, would be the rookie of the year. That's what I was going to say.
Drew, I think that's where it mentioned is when Ezzy goes through his rookies of the year.
He does that in 60 days later on.
Hey, no? Drew, just like Tupac, I ain't mad at you.
No, Eric actually did his rookie of the year this morning in the Globe and Mail, or yesterday afternoon at globesports.com, and he picked Taylor Hall. I disagree. Taylor Hall's been good, especially lately. But Jeff Skinner... consistently, from the beginning of the season, he's
been
terrific.
Be either Skinner or Bobrovsky right now.
Skinner. To me, Skinner, guys. I mean, Bobrovsky, again, is playing on a team.
He's got a hell of a lot of talent in front of him.
Yeah, team 6 deep on defense is 14 deep at forward.
Yeah.
You only dress 12 guys.
I think Skinner's been the most good. I think when you, well, first off, it's only been a half season. But when you look at a half season, you have to look at consistency. And Taylor Hall has been scoring in bunches. He's clearly the guy that's got the biggest upside.
Yeah. Jeff Skinner, 40 games played, 13 goals, 18 assists, 31 points.
That's impressive.
For a rookie, when you have 31 points, this isn't the era of Solani's 132-point seasons anymore. Those are long gone. For a rookie to get 30, 50 points.
Skinner wasn't expected to be doing that well. He was expected to make the team, maybe, but...
I mean, he was drafted 7th overall, but they didn't expect it this soon.
That was a surprise 7th overall. He was a guy shooting up the draft boards, but when Jimmy Rutherford took him, people were thought, oh, whoa, that's a little bit high. But you want your guy, right? You get your guy.
Exactly. It doesn't matter what the draft boards say if you want your guy. Moving to Chicago, where the Blackhawks defeated the Senators 3-2 in a shootout. Good performance by the Senators, but, I mean, the Blackhawks continue to struggle, and, you know, this is a...
Well, no, I mean, I think...
They win, but they don't do it in an impressive fashion.
Drew, the big thing here, sorry, Richie, the big thing here, though, is this is Ottawa's third loss in a row. I think one or two more losses than the move that we're expecting.
Well, no, I think if they were going to make that move, they would have made it after that 5-1 home ice defeat.
So we got James Gordon.
Exactly. James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen joining us later on to talk about that.
Good segue.
Thank you. In Dallas, the Rangers defeated the Dallas Stars 3-2 last night.
Matt Zuccarello had a pretty cool shootout goal, and he sped up, and then he stopped, and then kind of glided back into the net, and then he put it.
I had to Google that guy, Richie. He's Danish, right?
Norwegian.
Norwegian, yeah.
He's a big prospect. Great name. Norwegian prospect.
Sounds like zucchini.
Yeah, sounds like zucchini.
Zuccarello.
The Lennon's been very good for Dallas. He was good again yesterday, but the Rangers, again, guys, we're talking about the Rangers, and Ezzy and I both dropped them in our six things we learned this week in terms of what we like about that team. This team, it looks good. This team is tough to play. That's the biggest thing. This team is tough to play. You don't want to play the Rangers anymore. There's no easy games against them.
They don't take a night off at all.
No.
Yeah. I think.
Which is a testament to John Tortorella.
Yes.
Because the team's obviously bought in.
I'll say it again, Drew. You're the Capitals. You finish third or fourth. You play the Rangers in the first round. I would not be shocked at all if the Rangers not only beat them, but beat them in four or five games. Because that's a team that is built for the playoffs right now. And they have these players like a Del Zotto, even though Del Zotto was sent down recently, right?
Well, I'll say one thing about that matchup. If that matchup were to happen, we're getting obviously quite hypothetical right now. But the Stahl-Girardi shutdown combo against Backstrom Ovechkin line with Semin not contributing at all right now, is Washington a kind of a one-line team in that situation?
Well, potentially. And that's what I call a bold prediction by Ezzy right there.
No, but honestly, the guys that they've got, you've got Chris Drury, who's obviously battle-tested in the playoffs, and then you've got guys like Gavrik and Frolov, who are...
Drury and Frolov are afterthoughts, Ezzy. It's the young guys.
No, I know, but I mean, those guys are... Oh, yeah. Dubinsky has emerged really as...
Callahan.
As a top player, but...
But I love that young defense.
Yeah.
That's what I love about that.
Before we...
Matt Gilroy.
Yeah. Anaheim on home ice just destroyed the Columbus Blue Jackets 6-0 last night.
Yo, Steve Mason got pulled again. Steve Mason is...
Just awful.
Yeah, I mean, Steve Mason's awful.
Yeah, he's just awful. I mean,
I realize, look at his overall numbers. Forget Trent. Overall numbers. It's been terrible.
Yeah.
And Garon probably needs to play more there. Anaheim's been playing quietly very well, guys. And a 6-0 win if you're Anaheim without Ryan Getzlaff. So obviously he has that sinus injury. Without Ryan Getzlaff, a 6-0 win, home or away, it doesn't matter. They're playing at home. Hey, take it, you run to the bank.
Another guy, Drew, you mentioned the possible Calder, early midseason Calder candidates. Fowler had 3 assists. Yeah. Cam Fowler, defenseman for the Ducks.
Yeah, playing very well.
He has to be in that discussion.
And as a defenseman, have a harder time transitioning to the NHL, and you're absolutely right about that.
Yeah. Detroit beat Calgary in the shootout in Calgary 5-4.
Very exciting game.
Yeah, very high scoring, very exciting game, and we'll talk about Detroit Vancouver very quickly in a second because they're playing tonight.
Yes, of course.
And Vancouver took care on home ice; they destroyed Edmonton 6-1. Ryan Kessler with a hat trick.
I think Vancouver's beat Edmonton 15 times this year.
Well, anybody can beat Edmonton.
In my preseason predictions, when I predicted that Vancouver would win the West, one of my rationales for, we could check the tape. We just want to check the tape. One of my main rationales was that Vancouver gets to prey on four
bad teams.
Colorado, bad, but. Specifically about Minnesota and Edmonton.
Yeah. Minnesota is actually one of the hottest teams in the league.
They are.
When you're talking about the Pacific Division with Dallas, LA, Phoenix.
Yeah, Edmonton six wins right there, 6 wins, but 12 points on the board.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a lot. Marquee games tonight in the NHL. The early game is Boston at Montreal.
Right.
It's a nice game. Always a good rivalry.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the real big one, the big test for Vancouver is Detroit in Vancouver. Last time Vancouver had a home game against a perennial Western Conference juggernaut that was the San Jose Sharks. They got blown out on home ice. This is a big test for the Canucks. They have to take care of business.
But Drew, I think right now, Detroit going to Vancouver, I think Vancouver is the best team in the National Hockey League right now. I've said that since day one.
Yeah.
I think Detroit is up to the test because they don't have Datsyuk and they don't have Cleary, and they just lost Brad Stewart yesterday to a broken jaw.
That's why Vancouver has to win this game. They're 2 points up on Detroit right now in the Western Conference. Okay. Vancouver's got 59 points. Detroit's got 57. That's why they have to take care of business on home ice. Both teams played yesterday, but Vancouver played at home. Detroit's got to travel into there,
Drew, do we want to say this is a statement game?
No, it's.
You love those statement games.
Regular season doesn't have any statement games. Vancouver right now.
It's just a game that they have to win. If they want to be the Western Conference Stanley Cup representative, they have to win the game.
I'll chime in here. Mike Gillis and Kenny Holland, two of the top five GMs in the National Hockey League, maybe top three.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some goaltending news from around the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm not familiar with that song. I'll just turn it as you're the resident music expert here.
It's who? By Beck.
Gamma Beck.
Okay, there you go. Producer Tim chiming in there with the name of the song. Welcome back to the show. Come join us in the chat room, www.illegalcurve.com. Join Michael Remus. Talk about hockey. See some the links to all the different articles we're talking about and the different stories we're talking about. Lots of good stuff going on there. www.illegalcurve.com. Time to talk about some goaltending news from around the NHL. The beauty of, we were off last week, of course, for New Year's Day, so we have 2 weeks worth of information to catch up on. Mm-hmm. Let's start with Tampa Bay acquiring goaltender Dwayne Rolison from the franchise formerly known as the New York Islanders. They're now formerly known as the biggest joke in the NHL. Anyways, Tampa Bay acquired Dwayne Rolison for former first-round pick Ty Wishart. Rolison, a guy who's probably a journeyman, but a guy who, every spot he ends up seems to produce some decent numbers.
Right, Drew, his first game with the Lightning, he recorded a shutout. And the next game, obviously, they got
destroyed,
shellacked by the Penguins. But yeah, Rolison's 41, and he's one of those guys that when people talk about him, Richie, it's mentioned that he's still in very good shape, and he's a fitness freak. And there's not very many guys that can play at the level that he can play at, but if you look at his numbers with the Islanders, he still always has a high save percentage. And if you look at his numbers back in the days before the lockout with the Wild, he always had a really high save percentage.
Right.
The guy does not let in easy goals. He stood on his head for the Oilers in the run in 06. I mean, the guy has worked his butt off his entire career. He was a backup, and he split time in Minnesota. But it's a very good move for Stevie Yzerman and the Lightning because they get a veteran goaltender. The Lightning want to make a run in the playoffs this year. The Lightning are doing very well thus far. Not surprising me. They're doing just as well as I thought they would do with the moves they made.
You predicted them for the finals.
I think they might be a year or two away from the finals now, but I'm going to stick by my prediction. I still think, if everything goes well, we could see the Kings and the Lightning in their two young teams.
And
but it's a good move for the Lightning. They get a veteran goalie. And that's what they need.
It looks like Stevie Yzerman sort of had his choice between Dwayne Rolison in the trade or if getting Nabokov. Of course, Nabokov would have had to clear waivers. Which of the two would have you preferred?
Actually, like Rolison, Drew, I think, obviously the one downside is you have to give up an asset in Ty Wishart, but I don't know enough about Ty Wishart to give you an opinion on him. But, overall, you had Dan Ellis and you had Mike Smith playing at levels of
884
save percentage.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Over three goals against both of those guys. Yeah.
And that was obviously hurting the team. And you're out shooting teams and you're really peppering the other squad. You've got a good offensive group. And your goaltenders aren't even giving you 900 save percentage levels, which aren't even great anyways. Never mind. They're giving you 880. That's just awful. So Steve Yzerman has proved to be a very pragmatic general manager. He looks around, he sees what he's got there, and the risk, obviously, with signing Nabokov is what happened with Marek Svatos. If you sign Nabokov, you have to put him through waivers.
That's right.
And so the risk there is that somebody, competition or anybody else, a direct competition like somebody in the division or anybody else, would claim him. And the issue there, of course, is, do we want to risk that? Why don't we just identify it? Clearly, they don't think that much of Wishart. They're trading him for a half rent for a half season of a goaltender who's a pending UFA.
Dwayne
Rolison, a guy who's had, as he said, a high save percentage, played extremely well on the island this year with a .916 save percentage. A veteran, a guy who will fit into the room well. He works hard. He's unassuming. Nothing really not to like about this deal. Just Steve Yzerman, once again, doing another good job.
Yeah, that's pretty much, really, in a very short period of time, just...
establishing himself as probably one of the top general managers.
And Dwayne Rolston won't look good when he makes the saves, but he makes the saves, and that's all that matters.
Hasek flopped around like a fish out of water.
There, so clearly he learned something there. And Timmy Thomas is doing that in Boston. I mean, you just got to save the puck. Who cares how you do it?
That's right. There's no pretty points or anything along those lines. Moving to New Jersey, where the unthinkable has finally happened. Marty Brodeur is going to be splitting time with Johan Hedberg in nets for the Devils.
For the Devils! The devil!
And if I was a Devils fan this year, I would be screaming like Putty right there from Seinfeld as well. That was it's just been such a horrific year. I mean, as you're the biggest Devils Marty Brodeur fan, unless you've already officially jumped off the bandwagon. I mean, Brodeur's numbers are 5.18-1. He's got a 3.15 goals against average. He's got an .882 save percentage. The team isn't going anywhere this year. I don't necessarily know if they're going to be able to bounce back next year.
No.
Should they be thinking of trading Marty Brodeur?
No, they should not be thinking of trading Marty Brodeur. But
why not?
The fact that Marty Brodeur is now relegated to whatever you want to call it, 1B or even number two goalie, isn't surprising to me at all. Marty Brodeur is clearly been eating too many cinnamon buns during the season. All weight jokes aside,
Let me ask you this, because I disagree with you. Why wouldn't you want to trade him? I'd want to trade him. Get him. Get rid of him. Get an asset for him. You're not going anywhere this year. You're probably not going anywhere
for the foreseeable future, given your cap situation.
I mean, talent-wise, you actually could go somewhere next year. That's the only upside. It's just a matter of if this team wants in or if, as we've heard, everybody wants out of there.
Richie, I think
why not get an asset?
You make a good point. I think it's just a question that Brodeur wants to finish his career in New Jersey. He has no desire. He doesn't have anything to prove. It's not like he wants to win one more Stanley Cup. I think that he wants to finish his career in New Jersey, whether that's this year or next year or the next year.
At the same time, though, let me ask you this. Should they trade Brodeur? I think they should trade Brodeur. Let me ask you this. $5.2 million.
Who's trading for him?
Who's trading for him? And that's a fair question.
Who's he better than? What starting goaltender is he better than?
Well,
you could say
if you're Washington that you want the experience.
Ooh.
And he would fit in nicely there.
Imagine Brodeur in a Capitals jersey. Wow.
Well, I mean, that'd be a big seller. The question is, if you're trading for Brodeur, do you think that he can bounce back, or is it a steep drop, and this is how his career is going to end up?
It's not fair though to Brodeur, Drew, in this respect. What about the entire team? Everybody's had that drop, so don't just attributing it to age. Attribute it to many other things.
I don't think that it's
Travis Ajax had a bad season. He's in the prime of his career.
I would trade for Marty Brodeur. I think this is going to be indicative of how his career is going to end up. This team has been a disaster from the off season on. So
absolutely.
On a team that is back to being respectable and everything else, and has a good organization and a good dressing room and a good locker room, I think Marty Brodeur will go back to being a top 10 NHL goaltender.
And Drew, it's a good question. The question that you asked about, should the Devils trade Brodeur, is a good question based on where the Devils are as a franchise. But we can all agree that he's done so much for that organization, that Lamoriello.
Yeah, but Ray Bourque did so much for the Boston Bruins, and he got traded. So,
he wanted out, though.
Aside from Washington.
Because Brodeur won out, Drew. There's a difference.
That's the question. I don't
know if that's the best analogy, because Bourque wanted a Stanley Cup.
You're right. Brodeur's already got him.
But what I was going to say, Drew, is that that discussion happens. That's not a, by the way, Marty, do you want to get traded? It's no. It's like, Marty, you know what?
They have to approach him. They have to do it respectfully. I understand that. But, I mean, in the press conference to announce the Langenbrunner trade, Lamoriello said, we're not trading Marty Brodeur. Now, of course, it doesn't mean anything.
Well, it doesn't mean anything.
Let me tell you this, guys. I mean, aside from Washington,
who else needs a goaltender?
Nobody.
That's the problem.
Nobody in contention. I'll go right through the teams right now. Pittsburgh, Fleury, Philadelphia, Bobrovsky. Not going to trade Brodeur.
But Richie, but that's the thing. You don't trade within your division ever.
Rangers,
right?
So there's the top three teams in that division. Boston, they have Thomas and Rask. Montreal is Price. Buffalo is Ryan Miller. There's the top three teams in that division. Southeast, Tampa just got a goalie, and they're not trading. I don't think they're going to go all out for Brodeur. Washington, we just mentioned. Atlanta has Pavlich, who's been great. Carolina has Ward, if you want to throw them in there, okay? There you go. So nobody except maybe Washington, and you can certainly make an argument that Varlamov/Nuvera are as good right now as Brodeur, if not better. Then you have Detroit. They have Howard. They're happy with him. Nashville's Rene. Chicago, no cap room, because if they had cap room, they would have re-signed Niemi. Okay? St. Louis has Halleck. Vancouver, you have Luongo. Colorado, you have Anderson. Minnesota, you have Backstrom. Calgary, you have Kiprusov. Dallas, you have Lehtinen. Anaheim, you have Hiller. San Jose, maybe San Jose.
That's maybe the only team.
So there's the two teams right there.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot of... You're right. That's another problem. It's a big problem. There's not a lot of market for him.
And guys, and just quickly, Drew, I know we want to move on here, but if you can get a Setoguchi or a defensive prospect for Brodeur or a draft pick, yeah, you do it. Because the team... Richie makes a good point that they have enough talent with Kovalchuk, Parise, Zajac. You know, Elias will probably play at least a couple more years and well, he's under contract. But they have enough talent to maybe make the playoffs, but they're not a contender next year unless they wrap... Their defense is bad. That's their major weakness right now.
But if you were to sign Thomas Cavalier, you don't have the cap room, that's the problem. Yeah. If they were to sign a guy, Thomas Cavalier, and make the room because Arnett's coming off the books, they could turn it around pretty quickly, as he...
Detroit Red Wings goaltender Chris Osgood won his 400th career NHL game December... There you go. He won his 400th career NHL game.
People don't know that we have an audience, Drew.
Yeah, live studio audience here. He won his 400th career NHL game December 28th, a 4-3 win over Colorado. Made 46 saves in that game to win that milestone game for him. He one of the most underrated goaltenders of our generation?
No.
You're not an Osgood guy.
No, never have been.
I know. You just think he's a product of having amazing defense in front of him for all these years in Detroit.
The team that controls the pocket, a great team. He's a product of a guy who played in a great team. And you put him on any other team.
And we have seen him on other teams. We saw him struggle on St. Louis, and we saw him struggle on the New York Islanders.
Correctly, he played better on St. Louis than he did on the Islanders.
Yeah.
But regardless, I mean, he's a middle of the pack goaltender. That maybe that's sometimes generous, but no, he's a lower to middle of the pack goaltender who's played on terrific teams, who never have relied on goaltending and has succeeded from that. You know, is he a Hall of Famer? God no. Don't even bring it up to me. But has he had a respectable career? Of course, he's made a lot of himself. He's not a Hall of Famer, though. He's underrated.
If he's a Hall of Famer, then maybe Alan Bester is a Hall of Famer.
Don't make fun of Alan Bester.
Peter Ng.
Philly goaltender Michael Layton was put on waivers by the Flyers. He signed a 2-year, $3.1 million contract in the offseason after leading them, backstopping them to the Stanley Cup Finals. I mean, we didn't understand the signing when it happened, and I think it's just confirmed our suspicions all along is that, Michael Layton's not a... $3.1 million goaltender. He's not that good of a goaltender. He's an AHL, fringe NHL goaltender.
And he always was. When they signed him to that, they were giving him, basically thanking him for last season. I mean, let's be real here. His numbers were awful. They were awful.
I know. I don't understand the concept of thanking a guy for... I mean, that's how you could run into trouble. To get into trouble. Granted, it's not a huge amount of money in the grand scheme of things. $1.5 million a year. But it was just a bad signing from the get-go.
Nobody's going to sign for millions. I don't know why they give him $1.5 million. But at the same time, Paul Holmgren certainly knows how to accumulate talent, and he has probably one of the most talented, if not the most talented, roster in the National Hockey League right now. So it's a mistake, in my opinion, but by a guy who doesn't really make many of them.
Yeah, it's not going to hurt him too much. They just threw him down. They'll pay his salary. He's not on the books or anything.
Good to do it now. You do it now. You
clear up any controversy.
Boucher, they're going to go with Boucher more now over Bobrovsky. They can easily decide to split them. If Laviolette feels comfortable with going more with Boucher, which he has been lately, that's fine. But, Leighton's not playing at all. He was injured for most of the first half of the season. So it's a good move. And, Leighton was the, in my opinion, he did a lot last year in the playoffs, but Boucher's the better goalie. Boucher will give you more of a... Boucher's got his weaknesses. He's had his weaknesses, but he'll give you this more streaky goaltending.
Philly's goaltending still concerns me. It always has, always will.
Back on San Jose's goaltending. Niemäki's hitting a .903 save percentage, and Niemi's hitting a .905. Not saying
that they're tearing up anything, right? But the salary, does San Jose have the cap room?
That's the other issue, of course. And salary issues, are obviously the main thing here. Forget the actual talent. And with a $5.2 million cap hit, taking that on is a difficult proposition.
Let's go to break. We're stressing Tim out. We're going way over time. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to recap the under-17 tournament that happened in Winnipeg, and we're going to recap the collapse of the Canadians in the World Junior Hockey Championship. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Shortly before 10 a.m. in this morning, we're on until 12 noon. Still to come on the program, James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen and Gabe Desjardins of BehindTheNet.com. Richie, you got an email about the Brodeur suggestion. You want to share that?
From Timo Sepp, writer, Hockey Perspectives, the editor and the the boss at Hockey Prospectus had a funny idea, admits that it never would happen, but putting Brodeur over to Detroit to have him co-pilot with Howard, get rid of Osgood, and have Brodeur be there just in case Howard falters. Great idea. Unfortunately, obviously, Brodeur being a $5.2 million and Osgood being a loyal trooper there wouldn't happen. But, you know, Brodeur, it's we'll leave that discussion for the past second. But it's gonna be interesting over the next couple of months to see what happens there. The trading deadline, by the way, this year is February 28th.
It's early.
Yes.
Why so early?
Is it just
the way the calendar falls?
I think so. It's on a Monday, though, this year, I believe.
It's on a Monday? It's not on the typical... It used to be the Wednesday.
But I remember the PA was pushing for it to be earlier.
Was it? Oh, yeah, I think so. Yeah. Well, I think, yeah.
Drew, now that we know that it's February, 23rd?
28th.
28th? We can start prepping for it now.
Maybe we'll see if we can do some sort of special trade deadline version of the program.
That's what I'd like to do.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that off air.
TSN had a preview for the trade deadline a week in advance. That was amazing. I loved it. Getting you ready for all those future consideration for draft pick picks.
Ezzy, I have to ask this on air. Did you just go to the little vending area here and get a coffee Dr. Pepper combo?
I did, yes.
That is one of the most unique combos I've ever seen.
Are you going to put Dr. Pepper in the coffee?
Well, Tim will respect this. The reason why I got the...
And that smells like a bit of a French vanilla coffee, is that right?
It is French vanilla, yes.
Oh, it's really? I thought you had a cold.
Well, I'm a bloodhound in my spare
time. We're actually going to identify red Cabernet Sauvignons later, but the reason why I got a Dr. Pepper, and by the way, if you guys want the Dr. Pepper, it's up for grabs. I had to buy, I only had a toonie. The reason why I bought the Dr. Pepper is to get the quarter to get the coffee. You need a quarter in that room to get coffee, so that's why I bought the Dr. Pepper to get the quarter. Can we talk about hockey, Drew? You're looking at me with that look that you give me that I missed for 3 weeks.
Let's talk about the under-17 hockey tournament, which concluded here in Winnipeg after the new year.
Great game. Great gold medal game.
You guys were there at the gold medal game. Yeah, you took your
Jay
you
was
took
there
the hockey.
Too.
Yeah, of course, Jay from our sister station
job.
Over there at Bob yep. FM now.
You took your hockey team there.
I mean, what did you guys see besides an unbelievable attended game? 12,000 people for a tournament that usually draws 12 people?
Yeah. And, Richie, that was a record for the world under-17 hockey
record,
challenge.
A record, I think. It was unbelievable.
They didn't set the overall attendance record at the MTS Center, but that game set a single-game record.
Let me qualify that only because Tim Campbell wrote about it in the Free Press, only because a lot of the events were held at the MTS Iceplex, so there wasn't enough capacity to set the record.
But for the gold medal game to have 12,000 people there is just an astounding number.
And, Drew, another thing that, I think it was Tim Campbell or Randy Turner mentioned in the Free Press that next year, I don't know if they're going to be returning to Portage.
They were disappointed with the turnout of Portage.
Unfortunately, it wasn't
here next year as well.
Next year, I think that they're talking about playing more games. Obviously, we don't know that yet, but they might be playing more games at the MTS Center. But just quickly,
or they'll go to Selkirk. I mean, they'll go anywhere.
That game was Denny, me and Rich took our hockey team that we coach. So we had about 30 plus parents and players at that game.
Did the parents go too?
Yep.
I didn't realize the parents went.
We had some parents, and it was unreal. I mean, Team Ontario ended up winning. I think it was 4-2. Was it 4-2 final? 5-3. There was everything in that game. There was a Alexei Zamnov penalty shot.
Just a great shootout, scored by a penalty shot goal.
I think it was Matt Campagna, and it was great to see how the Winnipeg fans got behind Team Ontario, because for all intents and purposes it was Team Canada.
That's right. It didn't matter
if it was Team Ontario or Team Quebec or Team West. Which Team West is, for those who don't know, Team West is the Manitoba team.
Manitoba, Saskatchewan.
Felt a little bit old watching the guys on the U.S. team, such as Stefan Matteau's son.
Yeah. The fact that Stefan Matteau's son, his name is Stefan Matteau, is also...
And born in 94. When he scored the overtime goal against Brodeur.
Yeah. Wasn't the head coach Danton Cole?
That's right, former Jet.
Drew,
wasn't your bar mitzvah in 1994?
It was, in fact. That's very true. Yeah.
Well done.
I didn't know you that well then, but we knew each other.
I would have finished off
those party sandwiches if there was any leftovers.
I keep telling you that we don't actually socialize after the show at all, so we keep our relationship strictly professional.
I believe Warren Reichel's kid was on Team Canada.
Yeah, Kirby Reichel got the player of the game there.
He's supposed to be quite a prospect. I'll tell you this, Drew, for 16, 17-year-old hockey, I mean, good pace, a nice combination of system play, but also kind of the freedom of being the younger player and making the mistakes. One player in the States who really caught my attention, he actually was a player of the game, and he caught my attention even before that, Seth Jones, a defenseman on the U.S. He's a good-looking player, I'll tell you that. We're going to hear his name later on in the next couple of years, I bet you that.
You know, just to wrap up the under 17 conversation, kudos to the organizers. To get 12,000 people out to a tournament is just a tremendous number. So kudos to everybody who attended that game. It is here next year again.
Yep.
I don't think many people knew that necessarily, but
there's going to be more people there attending this event next year.
Feedback will rain out, and the truth is, people will talk about it and say, hey, you know, we had a great time.
Yep. Yeah,
reasonable prices,
decent hockey, good atmosphere. You know, you put the Canadian flag on anything,
that's true.
Will watch it. And they'll attend it, and they'll cheer like madmen. And, of course, final kudos to a very good friend of this show who will actually be with us next week. We'll talk about it a little later on. Yeah. Leah Hextall of CTV Winnipeg, who did the hosting duties for the TSN broadcast.
She did a
terrific job, and we'll see Leah. She'll actually be in studio with us next week for the final hour of the show. The World Junior Hockey Championships recap.
I guess we're doing a eulogy here, unfortunately.
You know, eulogy in some sense of the word.
Where did you get that sound clip?
From Remus.
That was Super Mario Brothers. But that was Mario 2, though. I'm pretty sure that was...
That is the game over music from Super Mario Brothers, or Super Mario Brothers 2, I'm not sure which. Yeah. We'll get Remus to
the less popular Super... Is it 3?
He's 3.
Okay,
Remus is telling us
it's Super Mario Brothers 3, but sound effect.
You know, the Canadians really, they sort of stopped playing.
I didn't see the game, I'll be honest. I was coaching the team that we the next day we coached, it was at practice, but... I saw the fourth goal, sorry, the fifth goal by the Red Russians. So at that point, it was already over. Having watched Canada play in the other games, specifically against the U.S., this is a team that was... Roy McGregor wrote a great article about it in the Globe and Mail. I thought he absolutely nailed it, and I recommend people go read that article. Just about the team, I mean, they played such a structured system, but when they had to err from that structure a bit, and they were getting thrown for a loop, and they were getting a little bit of, a little bit of pressure, they had trouble. And, people questioned Dave Cameron, his timeout, not being after the second goal, but being after the third goal. That aside, and I'm not sure if that's the issue or not, this was just a team, and Roy McGregor said it. And we talked about it before the tournament. I mean, this is a team that was a little bit hard-pressed for offense once in a while. And, guys like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, guys who were going to be top scorers, weren't put on the team. And was that the reason they lost? Well, probably not the only reason, but in my opinion, I think it was probably one of the reasons.
Their
goaltending wasn't great either.
Yeah, I thought it was a bad loss. You're up 3-0 in the third period, you expect to win. I thought national hand-wringing about it was a little bit overdone. I mean, look, they're kids, they lost... It happens. Let's move on. There's another tournament next year.
I mean, if we lost to the U.S., would we be saying that, I can't believe we lost? No, the U.S. were the favorites of the tournament.
Well, but anytime you lose a game when you're up 3-0 in the third period.
This is what I'm saying. We're talking about young players here. This is the Russians were basically the fifth best team behind Sweden, even behind Finland by some.
The Russians were not expected to win this tournament.
They came back and beat Finland, and then they came, and then they beat Sweden, and then they came, and they beat the Canes. These are under 20-year-old guys. Who knows what to expect sometimes?
That's right. Let's just sort of take a step back. Kudos to the Russians.
Yeah. Some guys who had, for example, what I like to do is watch the individual players. And even then, it's like, I'm not going to just take this five-game sample as to be, Eric Gudbrandsson didn't have a good tournament. But do I still think Eric Gudbrandsson is probably going to be a great defenseman on the Florida Panthers? Of course.
Yeah.
It's a small sample.
Exactly. It's just, take a step back, take a deep breath. Okay, we lost. It's too bad. Let's move on.
It's not the Olympics.
Drew, you know what?
It's not something that really matters.
It doesn't happen
every 4 years. It happens every single year.
What you're talking about, though, is I think it can be oversimplified. I think the Canadian team, this wasn't our best Canadian team ever, and we were up 3-0. Everybody thought we were going to win the gold. And what happened was Russia just exploded in the third period. Simple as that. They won the game in one period. We played the better overall game. Yeah. Sure, the goaltending wasn't great. You don't blame one guy ever in a hockey team. Hockey is a team sport. You don't ever blame... Vizintin played well in the first two periods.
The more desperate team usually plays better. The Russians were more desperate in the third period.
Right.
And once the Canadians started having to play again, they couldn't turn it back on, and the Russians had the momentum.
Let's be real here, guys. We've all played hockey. I mean, it's human nature.
That's
Do you think the Canadians were as motivated to play the Russians as they were to play the States of the game?
They always are.
No.
No chance.
No chance.
But there's
Ezzy, it's all motivation.
They're not. They weren't as motivated, but they're still motivated to win the gold.
There was a lapse. Clearly thought when they beat the U.S., they thought, as well as all the fans, is that was it. The gold medal was won. Because let's be honest here.
They were better than the Russians on paper.
Right?
It's also important to note, or let's just wrap. I wish I knew what Dave said in the dressing room between the second and third periods.
Well, you don't want to repeat it.
Well, because it's his job to get that team geared up for the third, and they came out flat. So I don't know why that is, because they're kids. That's why it happened. They're not professionals. If they're professionals, they would have been able to keep the momentum going. But before we wrap up the segment and go to break, thumbs up to the Russians for A, winning, and then B, being so hammered they couldn't fly the next morning. That is tremendous work on the Russian players' part.
You have to party.
It wasn't Ukrainian Christmas. Ukrainian Christmas is yesterday.
Russian Orthodox.
In Russia.
Oh, in Russia, maybe, Anyways, great job on them for getting hammered and thrown off that plane. That is a thumbs up as far as I'm concerned.
Apparently, they weren't even allowed on the plane. They were so drunk.
Yeah, well, that's the way
a
to do
of them
it.
Had to be pulled away because they were, like, passed
they had
out.
To be carried. Yeah. It's like, these guys didn't put, like, just a little bit of an effort
that's
into getting drunk. They went full bore, like, they played the third period and got hammered. So I'm giving a thumbs up to the Russians for that.
You have to be carried off when you boarded the flight to Costa Rica or when you were on the way back?
Kicking and screaming, in fact. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to go around the NHL with some more news and notes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live, Sports Radio 1290. One hour down, 2 hours to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. You heard from Shelley Anderson of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette in the first hour. Coming up this hour, James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen. And then next hour, Gabe Desjardins of BehindTheNet.com to go over some advanced metrics in the world of statistics as it relates to hockey. Come join the conversation. Go to www.illegalcurve.com. Join Michael Remus in the Yard Desk. He's got a great hockey chat going on over there. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve and follow us on Facebook at illegalcurve.com. It's time for NHL news and notes. No, it's not. Anyways, we'll move on. We'll start with, we'll get that clip up there later on. Sorry, Tim, my fault. We'll start with Daryl Sutter being released or resigning from his job as a general manager Calgary Flames. Sort of becoming a sad situation there in Calgary. You have this situation where two brothers now, Daryl Sutter, former GM, Brent Sutter, current coach, apparently aren't on speaking terms.
Well, apparently the rumor was that Daryl tried to fire Brent. They said no, and then Daryl resigned, quote unquote, and then Jay Feaster was pushed over.
Excellent. It's a bad situation anytime two brothers aren't talking, of course, unless it's, of course, Richard and your brother. That's always entertaining when that happens. Daryl Sutter, he was on the hot seat for the last couple of years. People questioned his moves. They definitely questioned his moves in the free agent season this year and trade deadline last year. And, I mean, I don't think Brent Sutter was the problem. I think Daryl Sutter was the problem, and I think this is the right move here.
Think about it. It is. Think about it this way, though, guys. Okay? Daryl Sutter comes. Daryl Sutter is the Sutter brother. He's really nice to the media. He's really friendly. He's easy to get along with. Everybody loves him. People look at him as, a lot differently than they do because he's gruff.
Yeah.
You yawn?
No, I was taking a deep breath. Huh? But the sore throat over here.
But overall, in terms of the job he did, guys, Daryl Sutter is a good hockey coach. He's not a good general manager. And that's what got lost, I think, here. But people didn't talk. They talked about Sutter as being one. He moved up to. He's a good coach. He took that Calgary team, which was not very good, all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. And
as a coach.
That's right, exactly. And in
not
San Jose,
as a general manager.
He was a very good coach for Dean Lombardi. He's not a good general manager. Didn't show any real ability. He had some positive moves. Don't get me wrong. Acquiring Rene Bourque was a great move for, a second-round pick or whatever it may be. I think it would have been conditional. Even signing Tanguay back this year. There were some good moves, guys.
Glenn Cross?
Yeah, Glenn Cross, exactly. There were some good moves, but there weren't enough, and he didn't know how to manage the cap. That was his biggest downfall. He didn't know how to manage the cap, and his other biggest downfall is he didn't understand that the game has changed. The pre-lockout game that he coached to the finals with that run, that holding and hooking and all that stuff, that doesn't work anymore. You got to move the puck. You got to have speed. His teams are slow. They lack skill. And will he ever get a job in the NHL again? For sure he will. Will he get a coaching job? Probably. GM, never.
He was just a bad general manager.
Never.
Now, what do you make about the communication problems? If you read Eric Francis's article in the Calgary Sun, which is available at www.legalcurve.com, you can see that the two of them didn't really... there was bad communication for the last year and a half in the Calgary organization. That's part of the reason why Jay Feaster was brought in, is to bridge the communication gap there. How do you run an organization when the general manager and the head coach aren't communicating with each other?
And they're brothers.
And they're brothers. We saw on 24/7, going back to HBO 24/7, we saw George McPhee and we saw Bruce Boudreau always talking to each other.
Right.
It wasn't deep, long, passionate conversations, but just keeping each other abreast of what's going on with the team.
Good point.
You can't run an NHL team without talking between the general manager and the head coach.
And by the way, Drew, I think, you know about that HBO 24/7 documentary, I think that, you know, the conversations between Bruce Boudreau and George McPhee, that was the only time that Bruce Boudreau wasn't using the F-bombs.
That's a good point.
Well, I mean,
he only uses F-bombs in the dressing
room. But at least he's communicating.
Right. I mean, communication is communication. But on this topic of Daryl Sutter, you know, resigning or being let go by the Flames and the communication issues he had with Brent, I think this speaks to what Richie was talking about. I think Daryl Sutter, and especially since Brent Sutter, you know, Brent Sutter's only been there for a year and a half. This is his second year. I think Daryl Sutter wanted to be behind the bench, and I think the way he was almost coaching from the press box. And Brent Sutter,
I felt like he always was
before Brent Sutter came to New Jersey. I mean, he was in New Jersey before he went to Calgary.
Yeah.
He was the owner and general manager and coach of the Red Deer Rebels.
Right.
Brent Sutter is used to doing everything. And Lou, one of the main reasons Lou Lamoriello brought Brent Sutter in there and pursued him and Brent Sutter wanted to go there is because Lou Lamoriello said, hey, do everything. I mean, Lou Lamoriello is not someone who was having a lot of impact. Obviously, the communication was good.
He did give Brent Sutter a lot of control for a coach under Lou Lamoriello, because as we can see with McLean and many other coaches, most coaches don't last, but Sutter was given kind of carte blanche there. Just do whatever you want.
Because of the respect he had with what he did in Red Deer and with the junior team.
Playing career in New York for the Islanders, the Cups, the four Cups,
and then
playing in Chicago, going to the finals with them. I mean, Brent Sutter is a very good track record. Team Canada, 1987, Canada Cup. Record's impeccable.
And how bizarre is it that then the guy's own brother refuses to give him the same sort of autonomy, knowing what his strengths are. I mean, it sounds like it was a bad marriage from the get-go.
And you know what? And Richie, the thing is, when Brent Sutter was brought to Calgary, everyone loved the move. It was, it's like, okay, the Sutter family already, I mean, I believe there's another Sutter brother who's involved with player development or scouting.
Four.
Ron?
In Calgary.
Ron Sutter?
I think so. Yeah.
There would now be three Sutters. You had Brett Sutter in the system. And I think everyone was expecting the relationship to be good because of that family relationship. But what happened was last year it was a disaster. They didn't make the playoffs. And it didn't get better this year because Jokinen and Tanguay were brought in, and If there's one player out there that's going to drive Brent Sutter insane, it's going to be Olli Jokinen. Guy with all the skill, but, you know, he's got a lackadaisical attitude. I mean, I think what happened with the communication between the two was that the results there wasn't any, and the results were just making it worse.
Well, Eric Hatch had an interesting point in the Globe. He said, you know, like Brent Sutter, when he left the Red Deer, hired Brian Sutter to run the show there. The team fell off the face of the earth, and he fired Brian Sutter. And, you know, it's between brothers, and they didn't hold any hard feelings. But that article was written last week, and then since then we've heard that there actually are hard feelings between Brent and Daryl. So we don't really know what to think. And the truth is, it is a family dynamic, and it is private, but it has become public.
The NHL Winter Classic was the most watched Winter Classic ever, up 22% over last year's game, and it was the most watched NHL regular season game in the last 36 years.
Mm-hmm.
Good, of course.
It was actually the worst game ever.
Well, it was a bad game. There were the circumstances, the rain, everything else. I mean, it's an entertaining game. It's sort of a two-part question. A, next year, January 1st is a Sunday. Yeah. Can they run that game up against the NFL season?
No.
No.
And B, where should the next Winter Classic be?
New York.
I agree with New York, and I agree with the New Year's Eve game, either at night or 4 o'clock would be 4 o'clock would be a cool time, right? When people are going to their parties and stuff.
Is that big? I mean, that's not going to be a difficult thing. I mean, that's actually makes it a little bit better, in my opinion. Now the whole New Year's Eve, it's kind of the same thing, and then you have it exactly Saturday afternoon.
Are we going to see this game in prime time from now on?
You might. It depends on NBC, of course, and depends on the new TV deal.
Yeah, but I mean.
I really like the suggestion by Larry Brooks in the New York Post.
Central Park.
He has a lot of suggestions that I don't like. This is one that I do like, Central Park, even though the capacity isn't great. The idea, I mean, just the aerial shots would be brilliant, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would be. I think, I know that they'd lose a little bit of money or whatever else, but it doesn't matter. You put that game in Central Park on New Year's Eve at 4 o'clock, I think you might have something.
Drew, you and Richie were out of town on Christmas when we did the Christmas show, obviously, but we were talking about the spectacle that is the Winter Classic, and I think that this idea, I think, is something unique. Hockey's got something unique here, and I think that things. We talked about this either on Christmas or the week before. That, you know, you could even have a game in L.A. on the beach, and I mean, I think
you could.
There's,
well, they played outdoor games in Vegas
before. They can do a lot with this. This is something that has been nothing but really good for the NHL. And Gary Bettman, the 4.5 million viewers in the U.S., I mean, that's exactly what they wanted.
That's manna from heaven.
It's been nothing but a success.
Is Bob Costas coming in?
Yeah, he's a guy who's never done anything to do with hockey before.
Yeah, Bob, where the heck are you for the rest of the year? Where the heck are you the rest of the year? Yeah. Come in, oh, hockey's a great game. This has become a classic. Or you're just spouting off about NBC being great and making something of this. Bob Costas can take a hike for as far as I'm concerned. I actually don't mind Bob Costas, but don't come in one hockey game a year and talk, oh, this and that.
The Montreal Canadiens added some depth to their blue line by acquiring James Wisniewski from the New York Islanders. They got him for a compensatory second-round pick and a conditional fifth-rounder in 2012.
How did they get James Wisniewski for a second round? How did they get him for that little?
Well, hold on. The Islanders got him for a third-round pick.
Yeah. So the Islanders, upgraded
there. He's a serviceable defenseman. He came to Montreal, and he has, 5 points already with Montreal? I mean, James Wisniewski has been traded already two or three times in his career.
Three times this year.
And he's not the best defensive defenseman. But James Wisniewski, especially with Markov and now Josh George is out.
Yes.
I mean, Wisniewski, that's a steal for Montreal. They need him badly right now.
Last one, the Dallas defenseman Trevor Daley agreed to a 6-year, $19.8 million contract extension, $3.3 million cap annually with a no-trade clause that kicks in next season.
Trevor Daley is a player I like. Remus and I were talking about him about a month or two ago and just how we like his underrated game. He can move the puck, he can skate, he's pretty positionally sound. He's not the biggest guy, but he's smart. And Joe Newendike doesn't throw around his money lightly, especially when you don't have an owner.
Yeah.
I like Trevor
Daley. Who's signing that check, by the way?
I like Trevor Daley. I like his game. And I think he's one of the more underrated players out there. And I think his game is going to become more appreciated as Dallas kind of gets back to the forefront of the American hockey landscape with their play and obviously their acquisition of Langenbrenner and such.
Third in the Western Conference right now. Let's go to break. When we come back, we got more news and notes. So when you take 2 weeks off, there's a lot of news and notes to cover. Right. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. It's 10:16 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on Sports Radio 1290. Come join the live chat going on at www.illegalcurve.com. Great hockey talk going on there in the chat room with Michael Remus in the art desk. It's time to continue with news and notes.
NHL news and notes.
There we go. 1 second later, but that's okay still. Anaheim Ducks forward Ryan Getzlaf is out until February after really breaking his face. I mean, that's the layman's term for what happened. He suffered multiple facial fractures. What is the loss? I mean, we know that Getzlaf is one of the supremely talented players in the NHL. Richie, you love him.
Love Getzlaf.
What's his loss mean to Anaheim this year? Is it just Anaheim is not really going anywhere, so it's not the end of the world?
Yeah, but I mean, Drew, they're in a playoff spot right now.
I wouldn't say they're not going anywhere. I actually like how Anaheim is shaping up. I think Nashville's got too many injuries, and I think Columbus is on the downside. So I like Anaheim.
Yeah, they're currently in fifth, tied for fourth with Nashville. Of course, they played four more games than pretty much everybody in the Western Conference.
Yeah, I know. But they've been playing well lately. Obviously, the Getzlaf injury is huge, Drew. I mean, back to that question, he is one of the top centers in the National Hockey League. The loss not only obviously affects his point total, but his losses have an adverse effect on Corey Perry and Bobby Ryan because he's the guy who passes these guys. And without him there, they're both scorers, guys. They both get assists, but they're both scorers. And he is, in my opinion, one of the top three passers in the National Hockey League. And without him, that's going to be who's affected most.
This is an injury that doesn't happen if he's wearing a visor. At this point in time in the NHL, why are you not wearing a visor?
Well, Drew, it's their choice. I mean, we've gone over this and over this and over this. If the guy has an option of wearing a visor, if he doesn't want to wear a visor and he gets injured because of it, don't cry wolf. And he's not crying wolf.
But as a team, as an organization, are you not doing everything in your power?
Maybe Ryan Getzlaf thinks, Drew, he can't play, especially if he plays a game in terms of not only in your face, but more so the way he sees the game. Maybe he doesn't think he can see as well and make the passes as well if he's wearing a visor. And now, obviously, that would be contradicted by the fact that guys like Crosby wear visors.
Yeah.
But that's how he feels.
I'm not begrudging him of his opinion. I'm fine with it. It just seems to me when you don't wear a visor, you at least a couple times a year, you see these injuries occur to big-name star players that are out of the lineup for 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks because the guy refuses to wear a visor.
Gretz didn't wear a visor.
I know that. I don't understand it. I'm not justifying it. I'm just saying I don't quite understand it.
But to your point, though, You started to say, is it up to the organization to do everything in their power to make sure that their players wear a visor, right, Drew?
That's right.
You're yawning again.
I'm not yawning.
Am I boring you?
I'm taking a deep breath.
Am I boring you?
Are we boring
you?
I thought the show's been exciting so far.
It's my sore throat, you two. You know
you're yawning. I mean, it's 10:19. We have an hour and a half left.
I'm not yawning. I'm taking a deep breath to try and get over the sore throat.
I know. It's been a tough week.
When you talk as much as I do on this program, you need to make sure your vocal cords are always in the best optimal situation.
Did you put any Vicks VapoRub on, or are you just a lozenge?
I have my lozenges in front of me. And I'm trying to use the lozenges to get through this program and to the best of our abilities so that the listening audience is accustomed to my golden pipes.
You don't use
I wouldn't want to shaft the listening audience by sounding a little more hoarse than I normally do.
What you do today?
I'm trying not to, is what I'm saying.
Back to your point about the visor policy, you know, I think that the organization does think of that. When Ryan Getzlaff suffers an injury like this, you have to think that Bob Murray
is
thinking
hockey.
About and he played hockey. Yeah. But I think Drew, where we're at now, I think you have visor usage at an all-time high in the NHL. Mm-hmm. They have grandfathered it in, but I think it boils down to if a guy doesn't want to wear it and Getzlaff says, you know, I just don't want to wear it. I know that I could get an eye injury. I mean, we've seen guys like Colin White. Suffer eye injuries. He actually has impaired vision out of one eye. Now
Brian
he wears
Brian
a visor.
Lose his eye almost on the ice.
But I mean, if that's happened already, I mean, I don't think you're gonna see a team policy where they have mandatory visors yet. I think it might happen one day, but right now, I mean, it's one of those things. Like you're probably right. If he has a visor, that injury doesn't happen.
That's just my point. I think you know. That's it. You want to stay in the lineup. The point is to be able to play the games, not to be, you know, you're not doing anybody any good if your face is broken and you can't play anymore. Jamie Langenbrunner was traded from the New Jersey Devils to the Dallas Stars in exchange for a conditional third-round pick. That happened yesterday. It becomes a second-rounder if Dallas wins a playoff round or re-signs him. Do you guys like the acquisition for Dallas? Langenbrunner and new old head coach Jacques Lemaire do not get along. They didn't last year. That continues this year. It just seems like, you know, it's a good deal for Dallas to get a player with a playoff veteran like Jamie Langenbrunner.
It's funny. I just want to say first off that, you know, on Thursday, before we were meeting, me and Richie we heard the news that Langenbrunner was about to waive his no trade clause, and I asked Richie straight up. I said, "Where's Langenbrunner going to go?" Because he's obviously going somewhere. And Richie mentioned Montreal because Montreal had pursued Langenbrunner in the past. And then I just threw out, you know, it would be funny if Langenbrunner went back to Dallas and was reunited with Nieuwendyk. And it turned out that I was a prophet. No,
is that another bold prediction of yours?
No, but you know what? It's a great move for Dallas, and it's a sad move for New Jersey. And the reason why it's a sad move for New Jersey is that Jamie Langenbrunner, since he's been in New Jersey since, I believe, 02, he was there for the 03 Cup team.
01-02, yes, right.
01-02 when he was traded. He's been one of the most consistent, hardworking players, well-liked players. He's been their captain since last year. They didn't get very much for him back. He might only have 2-3 years left, playing at a top level. But it's just sad because, you know, Langenbrunner, since they acquired Kovalchuk and around that same time, Langenbrunner had some injury issues. But it's just it's an unfortunate move because New Jersey.
Forget about the Devils.
They're terrible.
I mean, 22 it's points. For the Stars, I mean, you're adding a guy who is a reasonable salary. He's the past few years, when he's played 81 games the past 2 years, is 61 and 69 points respectively. A couple, you know, the Zajac Langenbrunner Parise line, as a year and a half ago, was unstoppable.
It was a 100-point line.
Yeah, I mean, it was unstoppable. This guy.
Not to mention Parise's.
He's responsible defensively. He's got a good slap shot. He can move. He's not maybe as swift as he once was. He's willing to throw the body around. To me, he's an all-around, you know, really good second-line right winger. I like this addition a lot. I think he brings a lot to the table. I think Joey Nieuwendyk, you know, you have to remember Joey Nieuwendyk played with Jamie Langenbrunner.
Sure.
Langenbrunner was his line mate.
Well, they were part of that trade together.
That's right. For
yeah,
Arnett,
they both
right?
came over, yeah.
That's right. And so
Randy McKay was involved in that
places.
Trade, too.
That's right. They played in both places, and I like this trade of veteran. He's been in Dallas. He's familiar. And that's a team that has some veteran presence, like Richards, who's gone to the Cup final. But also, and won the Cup, but also youngsters and guys, you know, who haven't played in as many big games. So it's a nice mix and a good move as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you also, you know, you take into account his salary for the guy, for what he produces. You know, 61, 69 points the past 2 years. Jamie Langenbrunner is only pulling in $2.8 million this year, and his cap is $1.4 million. Cheap.
I mean, there's no risk. I mean, it's minimal risk for Dallas. Do you like what New Jersey got, third or a second?
I think they could have at least got a second guaranteed, but what do I know?
Okay. The Edmonton Oilers will be without the services of rookie Jordan Eberle.
Problem was the rush to trade him, I guess, because of Lemaire. Why not just hold on to him and get a little more value for him near the trade deadline?
Why hire Jacques Lemaire to be your head coach for the eighth time? He's the Billy Martin of the NHL. The Edmonton Oilers will be without the services of rookie Jordan Eberle for 10 days due to a sprained ankle, and then somehow, unrelated, he had an emergency appendectomy. Does it seem like athletes are having emergency appendectomies more often nowadays?
No, you just read it. You read that line too many times.
Emergency appendectomy?
Yeah.
Like in general, I read it too many times?
Think, like there's emergency appendectomies everywhere. Didn't Slater suffer an emergency appendectomy on Saved by the Bell?
Which episode was that?
Or no, that was maybe Zach.
Well, I mean, Matt Cattle had an emergency appendectomy.
He played like 10 days later.
I don't know. Apparently, aren't you supposed to be out for a month?
Maybe there's just more news out there, Drew.
You get ice cream after an emergency appendectomy.
Those are tonsils.
Oh.
Does it mean anything, or the Oilers just not going anywhere, so, you know, rookie takes 10 days off? Okay.
It means my Calder Trophy prediction is probably not going to win out.
That's too bad.
Fair enough.
You had big money running on that one, didn't you?
Yeah, 3 cents.
Is it possible that Jordan Eberle was so upset that someone didn't score a goal like he did against Russia that it affected his appendix?
Maybe.
Could be, emotional trauma. Fans in Columbus claim that veteran official Paul Dvorsky taunted them during the Blue Jackets' 4-3 shootout win.
Hold on. Oh. There's fans in Columbus?
Apparently enough that they claim that he taunted them.
That would have been a good time for the applause sound effect.
When over the Minnesota, the game happened on December 27th. The fans were giving Dvorsky grief for missing a high stick on Rick Nash. Apparently Dvorsky then made the crying boo-boo face to the fans.
We're really talking highbrow stuff here.
And allegedly, but this was denied and nothing was found about it. He apparently gave him the finger also.
Yeah, but Drew, if this was on a Columbus blog, right? And I read this yesterday.
No, it's Aaron Port's line. I mean,
I'm not saying that.
Apparently,
it wasn't.
Didn't give him the finger.
No, I'm not saying
the
that's
NHL
not reputable.
Says they didn't. The fans say he did. I mean, they say he scratched his chin with his middle.
Drew,
finger.
I'm not saying that it's
I'm
not
so
reputable.
Offended.
Where's the video though to determine if this is a story or not? I mean, I'm not saying
we've had Aaron Port's line on. If you went to paid $60 to go to Columbus Blue Jackets game and watch the Columbus Blue Jackets play.
You know, I like it. You know, the ref's giving it back to the fans now. That's this is cat chases dog sort of stuff here. Right?
Tom and Jerry.
Yeah, there you go. You know, why not? You know, this is a guy who's been around. I'm sure he was so bored officiating this game. You know, he's been around the NHL.
Oh, 8,000 people there in a weekday.
He's been around the NHL. This is what his 20th year as an official.
Paul Dvorsky.
Yeah.
You're still calling games? I thought you were tired.
Well, no, this is what the story's about. Like, what part of this is confusing to you?
I'm joking.
But, I mean, he's been around the NHL. I'm going to look up, see how long he's been an NHL official for.
Drew, we should ask you to ref.
I think that the Blue Jacket fans who were involved here... So
21 years he's been around the NHL.
They wanted to see something. He scratched his chin and they thought it was a big deal.
Exactly.
Nothing. There's no story. Like,
people
I mean,
love looking for
there is a story here, and Aaron Portsline did actually a good job of getting quotes from fans.
How did this get into the show plan?
Neither of you contributed anything, so I had to do it all.
How did Drew get into the studios? I thought the door code was changed.
Let's go to break. James Gordon, the Ottawa Citizen, coming up. I may or may not be here after the break. We'll see. You're listening to the Eagle Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.